from youngsters falling by the wayside. Phenomena that seems to be rising at an alarming rate. While, of course, there are many factors involved in this problem, I would venture to say, based on my clinical experience, the most critical component of this problem is children's core basic unhappiness with themselves. Not unhappiness with their lives, since Baruch Hashem, in many ways, life has never been better. Not unhappiness with their material possessions, although they sometimes express it that way. Rather, a basic unhappiness with the self. It's for that reason that tonight's topic is Raising Happy Children. The subtitle is really important. Actually, the Torah itself discusses the importance of Simcha. In Parshas Kisavai, the Torah enumerates a list of terrible klolos that will befall Klal Yisrael, and at the end, the Torah says why it happened. It doesn't say that they weren't David Hashem, or they were, but it wasn't the Simcha. The question, the obvious question is it really for just not being David Hashem the Simcha, for a lack of Simcha, that they deserve such callers? Now, I was thinking perhaps you can say that it's not the lack of Simcha per se that causes it to bring about these callers, but what lack of Simcha brings to. As my Hasidic friends once quoted to me from the famous Rabbi Kalina, that he says that Atzvus is not in itself an Aveira, but it brings to the biggest Aveiras. Likewise, Simcha is not in and of itself a mitzvah, but it brings to the biggest mitzvahs. The question, why is this so? Why is Simcha so important in Aveiras Hashem? Now, I was thinking perhaps, because what is the elementary, most basic job of a from parent? It would seem to be the transmission of the Messiah to the next generation. As any salesman will tell you, if you want to sell a product, it should be associated with pleasant feelings. Madison Avenue spends billions trying to connect unnecessary products to the feelings of happiness and necessity. Certainly we who have a most fantastic product to sell should have it associated with Simcha. This point is illustrated by well-known Vart that Rav Moshe Feinstein Zechatzadik Lebracha once said. Someone once asked him a very troubling question. We know in the beginning of the last century, it was impossible practically to find a job. We didn't have to be Mechal Shabbos. And unfortunately, most people were not able to withstand the Nisayon. Yet there were Elechiyidim who did withstand the Nisayon, who lost a job every weekend. When they came back after the weekend, they lost a job because they wouldn't come to work on Shabbos. And many of these people literally starved because of their devotion to Shmir Shabbos. And yet, tragically, with the vast majority of these people, their children became the Chalalei Shabbos. Someone once asked Rav Moshe, how is it possible parents who set such an example would have children who became the Chalalei Shabbos? Rav Moshe answered, he did not attribute it to what's going on out there, as is popular to do today. It wasn't the alluring Western culture and media that was doing it. He pointed the finger inward. That many of these wonderful Al-Khayidin, we should never be in their shoes, the Nisayon they went through, although they had the Mesiras Nefesh, when they would come home after they were laid off of yet another job, would their children would hear them groan, like these shares us to Zaynayid, how difficult it is to be a Jew. If they saw Shmir Shabbos being associated with unhappiness and pain, is it a wonder that they weren't attracted to it? We see from this that it's not sufficient for frum parents to give over the Messiah, or even to set a sterling example. Rather, they have to create an emotional atmosphere conducive to the transmission of the Messiah. Now, since most contemporary from youngsters live in an environment where the norm is Shmir Shabbos, Kiyum HaMitzvos, Limud HaTorah, today, unlike the time the Ramesh was speaking about, even children who are somewhat unhappy will at least superficially stay in the fold. However, and therefore, perhaps we're lulled into complacency. However, even today, if they become unhappy enough, they will become overwhelmed with a desperate search for at least temporary happiness. This can take the form at times of acquiring flashy clothes or finding or seeking artificial happiness in drugs or boy-girl relationships. It's for this reason that Alter von Kellen, speaking about the Maimon Chazal, Barasi Yetzirah, Barasi Leitera Tavlin, where Hashem says, I created the Yetzirah, I created an antidote to Tyra. So there's some Chazisal. This antidote is only when it's Tyra B'Simcha, because it's Simcha that is the critical, that's the active ingredient in this medication. And I was thinking that perhaps this is the reason. In the Haddamah Tariq Leitali has a fascinating book. It says there are some Talmid Chachamim who've been known to him that they can't learn Torah Lishma because it's so gishmak. How can you learn Lishma when it's so gishmak? Look, the Leitali, they're making a fatal error here, a fundamental mistake. Because in Torah, that is the Lishma. The Lishma of Torah is having a gishmak in learning. And perhaps this is the reason. Perhaps, as Rav Simcha Zissel says, that since it is Torah, since it's a Simcha of Torah that is the antidote, that is the tablet for the Eight Sahara, then perhaps that's the Lishma. I made a similar point in an article that I wrote for the Jewish Observer, I believe it was given out, on teaching Midas to children. And I write there that the best way, or the only way, to teach Midas to children is to treat them with Midas. One reason is the obvious reason, you know, you can't scream and yell at a child to be a Bar Midas, for obvious reason, because you're not setting an example. But perhaps a more fundamental reason, a more crucial reason, because the only way a child will be a true Bar Midas is if there's an atmosphere of simcha in the house, an atmosphere of calm and emotional support. And the reason for that is Rav Dessler says in the Mishnah Maleiot, true chesed does not come from self-deprivation. Chesed does not come from depriving yourself to give to somebody else. True chesed comes when a person is happy, content, and satisfied, and he overflows with happiness which he wants to share with others. And with this, perhaps you can understand what the Torah tells us in Parshas Ki Savai, that when the Messiah is not given over to Simcha, then it will lead to terrible behavior which will lead to the Klolas. It's not the actual lack of Simcha per se. If a person is able to have the Simcha, for that he deserves such Klolas. It's what it leads to. The Torah Pashit, it does us a favor and informs us that we should know where did those terrible behaviors come from. What was the root of those terrible behaviors? The root started when they were still being Ibn Hashem, but it was the lack of Simcha. Since Baruch Hashem, most parents today do not lose their jobs because of Shemir Shabbos. So the question is, why do so many contemporary youngsters feel the Shirk Zainayid versus Takazay Shirk? And this is especially important for younger parents to hear because we can prevent many of the future problems that come up in adolescence if we work on it right now. Many of the problems, you know, when adolescents have problems, people say, look, teenagers, adolescents, that is not true. It is not normal for adolescents to have to go through such turmoil. Recent research has shown that unlike previous theories, children who grow up in a happy home with a good relationship with their parents manage to get through adolescence without any more turmoil than a two-year-old can create. We all know about, I mean, I guess you guys know, I see that my grandchildren what two-year-olds can do, and adolescence doesn't have to be any worse. However, as Rav Noach Herlewick, I saw a letter he wrote once recently that someone shared with me. He quotes Revolta that in our generation, one should not hit a child who's over three. Because a child over three today has a din of a B'nai HaGadol that the Gemara in Makkos talks about being not allowed to hit. And more recently, Rav Herlewick says Revolta added a new twist. That today, when you hit a three-year-old, he'll hold back his anger. He won't hit you back. But he'll hit you back years later. So our focus tonight is on some preventative steps that young parents can take to avoid some of the later problems. In a general sense, I would say that children are unhappy today because they live with the persistent feeling that they are a disappointment to their parents. Not that something they did disappointed their parents, but their whole mahus, their whole selfhood, is a disappointment to their parents. And this feeling, in my opinion, is the core necessary ingredient for adolescent depression and acting out. It is also unfortunately the factor that we as a community are most reluctant to confront. We are much more comfortable in blaming the decadent Western culture. Why are parents feeling so disappointed in their children? I'll try to address this question from the more obvious reasons to the more subtle ones. The most obvious hindrance to raising happy children are parents' own unmet and unresolved emotional needs. This was always like that. There's nothing new. One common issue is the need to control. The need to control is probably the foremost hindrance for a positive child-parent relationship. It is an unfortunate reality that due to factors in their own past, many parents have a strong psychological need to control. The ones who are obviously most likely to be the targets of that need is their children. That makes it all but impossible for these parents to focus on their children's needs. Research has shown that emotionally healthy parents who are going to have emotionally healthy children, when their own needs conflict with a child's needs, they'll put their child's needs ahead of their own 75% of the time. Mind you, not 100%. We don't need Jewish martyrs. But 75% of the time. As that percentage decreases, the likelihood of the child's affecting the child's emotional health increases. If it reaches 25%, where the parent only puts the child's needs ahead of their own 25% of the time, you're likely talking about a schizophrenic child. Obviously, parents who own basic needs have not been met are not able to put their children's needs ahead of their own most of the time. This phenomenon was not discovered by modern psychologists. It has been known by Chasam Rabbanim of both of this and previous generations. Rav Shlaima Volba, the Mashgiach in the Mir in Yerushalayim, in the Sefer Zeru Binyan B'chinech, was given out, I think, in the shul, an article I once wrote for the Jewish Observer on teaching children midos. He writes the following. I wrote it there in a footnote. This is my own translation because I wrote this before. Feldheim recently published an English translation of the Sefer. It's Kedai Kabai. He writes like this. He's not talking about disturbed parents. We frequently find parents who take action toward their children ostensibly for educational purposes, when in fact the true motivation is purely egoistic. At times, the parents act toward their children with totally unacceptable midas, behavior that would be considered reprehensible in any other interpersonal context. For example, jealousy, hate, anger, pride, and especially the need for power. The parent feels, my child is my possession, I am entitled to rule over him in an absolute manner. He is my object, and his mission in life is to serve my needs. Now, when parents develop an attitude of ownership rights on a child, they no longer look at themselves as a factor in the child's behavior. They do not feel the need to promote, to elicit, or encourage behavior and attitudes. They rather feel they can demand it. Their children become objects, and the parents see themselves as innocent bystanders. A frightening mice that happened a few years ago. It's frightening because these weren't obviously crazy people. They looked at them, people, everyday people. But you can see how lack of insight can go. There was a lady that was speaking to me, came to see me. She was bemoaning the terrible situation in her family where two children went off to Derech HaFundalitzlan, and the other children, each one suffered from various forms of emotional problems. And she told me she knows exactly what the problem is. Her husband is a very critical, negative, overly demanding and controlling person, father. And he's so oblivious to this that one time he told his wife that this problems he's having with his children is causing him an incredible crisis in his emunah. What's the crisis? Because this person ostensibly was a very chashuvim. He was a big talmid chacham. He was a big makbid of mitzvahs and chumras. And he says he doesn't understand how the Rebbeinu should consent someone as from as himself, one klala after another. One problem child after another. How could Rebbeinu do this to him? Now this attitude, where a parent does not see themselves as a crucial factor in the child's behavior, robs the parents of the most effective tool with which to influence their children, namely their relationship with their children. Another negative effect of ownership feelings, as a parents react, when parents who feel this way react with the same anger to minor infractions as to major crimes. And the reason is obvious. I sometimes wonder when kids tell me, patient youngsters who come to me for therapy, and they tell me some of the way their parents reacted to minor infractions, like I'm in the Steinman. It took me a few years to figure it out. Then I figured it out. You know, in a dictatorship, you can get shot for jaywalking, just like for holding up a bank. It makes no difference. Because what's the outlet? The outlet is you didn't listen to the government. The government told you to do something, you didn't listen, so you get shot. It doesn't matter what it was. Some parents feel the same way. If they told the child to clean up the toys and he didn't do it perfectly well, then it would be the same as if he purposely, you know, threw a rock through a window. What's the not to mean that? Because he didn't listen. Even when a child needs to be disciplined or reprimanded, it is essential that the reprimand fit the crime. Many children are unhappy due to relentless and unreasonable feelings of guilt because they were subjected to relentless and unreasonable criticism. I sometimes told some of my patients who feel guilty over everything, that you could actually put this on a bumper sticker. Guilt is too precious a commodity to waste on when you did nothing wrong. Now, controlling parents tend to be consistently and unreasonably critical and to speak to their children in a negative and a cynical manner. Being constantly criticized is guaranteed, I'll give it to you in writing, to demolish self-esteem. And that is the root cause of 99% of emotional disorders. Too many contemporary youngsters experience Yiddishkeit as a burden without sufficient personal meaning. These children perceive their parents as being more concerned with impressing other people than what is right or wrong for them, their individual children to do. If we were honest with ourselves, we would see that we often object to what our children want to do because of our concern for our own reputation, rather than consideration of what is appropriate for them at their stage of development and growth. Now, we of course often justify this objection out of concern for the shidduch prospects. The kid might be 2 years old, but already worried about the shidduch. I would say that this reasoning defies logic. What is going to be more harmful to a child's future married happiness? Losing his self-esteem because we constantly criticize and pressure to stay within every iota of societal norms, or the fact that some youthful indiscretion, maybe when he was 14 years old for a period of time, he wore a yarmulke that was a quarter of a centimeter smaller than what he was expected of him. Which thing is more likely to cause him future unhappiness? When Yeshiva Bach once described to me what happened, the hassles, the harassment he went through every time he went to play basketball. He was a good boy, Bach and Yeshiva, he was learning, a decent boy, not to misbehave, but when he went to play basketball, and he'd put on his sneakers, of course, to play basketball, and he'd walk with his sneakers, he'd wear even a jacket, but he'd wear his sneakers from the front door of the house to the car which was parked in front of the house, and his mother would get hysterical. She was horrified. Imagine if somebody sees you walking with sneakers, and he doesn't know that you're going to play basketball. Rachmana Litzlan, what they might think, how would you ever get married? Now, of course, one cannot and should not be oblivious to community standards, but we should have some sense of perspective. We have to balance a child's individual needs and the importance of maintaining a positive relationship with the need to maintain standards. When we as parents are personally more concerned with our status in our neighbor's eyes than in our children's emotional well-being, then it becomes impossible for us to maintain this perspective. It is important that our children feel that we want them to have an emotional stake in Asiyas HaMitzvahs and not just to perform flawlessly to please us or to impress our friends. On a much more subtle level, there are many parents who have don't have a conflicted relationship with their children, who do not relate to them as individual emotional beings. As someone once put it, they treat them like human doings rather than human beings. This causes the children to neglect their own emotional needs, and they grow up with a feeling they lack a sense of self. They feel empty. And I see these kids as teenagers. I see that they try to fill this emptiness. They try to, as a substitute for their sense of self, it's impressing other people. You don't know how many people in yeshiva, young bachurim, who are severely depressed because they don't even have a musik what their sense of self is. Their whole life revolves around impressing other people. They can sit in the basement until 1 o'clock, but it's only to see who will see him there. And one guy went into a terrible panic because for some reason he had to leave early. And there was somebody who saw him leave early who doesn't know that he usually stays late. It's a very fellow. The guy might think that he only leaves at 11, not at 1. Now this causes many precise depression. This Agavurcha, I'll tell you that one of the common problems, another problem that's very prevalent in our society is young men and young women who have troubles with shidduchim. And I think it has a core in the same problem. Because the decision making by shidduchim involves feelings. How does one decide about a shidduch? Other things also, especially about shidduchim. After you go through the cheshbonos of writing the shidduch, you go with your feelings. In fact, for years it bothered me, besides the famous Gemara by Rabbi Yom Kaim Yitzis of Lav, there's another Gemara, the B'chol Yoyim V'yoyim, a Paschal goes out, the Paschal Yoyim V'yoyim. And I always wondered, what is the purpose of a Paschal that no one hears? your paschal is a chachamim heard. I understand, it's a paschal. But what in the world is a tachlis of a paschal that no one ever heard? Then one day I saw a beautiful from the Chazanish. The Chazanish says the paschal is your feeling. You go out with somebody on the shidduch, and the leiv is night to lechiyev, that is the paschal. But in order to hear it, you have to be tuned into that channel. Right, and there are children or adults who, as children, their feelings were never taken seriously or were actively made fun of, and therefore they're not tuned into that channel. So they don't have the kli with which to make decisions. Anyways, children who are vocally controlled, whose parents emphasize control over their feelings, they become perfectionistic or obsessive compulsive. Especially if the parents are also overly critical, because these children do not accept personal or environmental limitations as dispensations from self-imposed demands for perfection. Unfortunately, in our community, we are usually more concerned about our children's physical, spiritual, and intellectual well-being than about their emotional well-being. And so we don't promote their sense of individuality, which is an essential ingredient in happiness. Now, we often blame the schools for this. How often do we hear complaints? I was recently at a professional conference. Most of the time was spent bashing yeshivas for not paying enough attention to individuals. I don't agree. It certainly is beautiful if yeshivas would pay more attention to individual needs, and some of them are trying harder than others. But that's not the essential task of a yeshiva. The essential task of a yeshiva is more of any school or any social organization is to socialize. To individualize is a parent's job. A kid should get to yeshiva with a strong sense of individuality, and he'll be able to handle the yeshiva a lot better. Another factor which is more current, which explains more why this problem is becoming more widespread, is the rising level of expectations in all areas of our life, both in Ruchnius and in Gashmius. It used to be, it was accepted as a matter of course, that in every home, in every school, in every community, there will be people functioning at different levels. There are people who are at higher academic levels, people at lower academic levels, some with more ability, some with less, and it was considered the norm, and they're all part of the same family. Today it's no longer acceptable. I ask you, how many parents do you know that would be able to live with an average child? That's why, in this respect, I think our generation, as far as for kids in our generation, is both the best of times and the worst of times. It is one of the primary tasks of parents to encourage children to be proud of their everyday, non-glamorous accomplishments, so that they will have a reliable, steady source of positive self-feelings to energize them. How, you might ask, can we reconcile this idea of being positive of average accomplishments with the idea of the necessity for striving for spiritual growth? Fortunately, Rav Yitzchak Kuttner, the Tzaddik Lebracha, addressed this dilemma. An incredible verse. I'd like to see it inside. It's in the Pachat Yitzchak Sefer Zikaron, I believe it's on Daf Ein Aleph. I'll tell you very bekitzer, but Imamish addresses this problem, and he gives the answer. He says that a Yid who strives to be a Bal Madrega will, of course, no longer feel a sense of simcha for being a Pashat Yid without Madregas. Yet he says it's a necessary ingredient. If you cannot be a Yid with a Bal Madrega without having simcha and being a Pashat Yid on Madrega. He writes that it has to flow in your veins, that simcha. So you have a paradox. The more you become a Bal Madrega, the less simcha you have in being a Pashat Yid on Madregas. But he says that you have to maintain that simcha. And we have today, Baruch Hashem, we have so many accomplishments in Ruchnius and yeshivas that most kids walk around feeling that they have to do something special that the parents should feel happy with them. Now, even though, does this mean we're not permitted to reprimand our children or to have any expectations from them? Of course not. But first of all, we have to make sure our expectations are reasonable for the child's age and for his level of development. Revolver writes in that sefer that expecting a young child to sit by a Shabbos table throughout a meal is an unreasonable expectation. And yet how many parents fight with their children every Shabbos and get into hassles and harass them because they expect them to sit throughout the meal by the Shabbos table? And what ends up happening is his memories of Shabbos is fighting with his parents. Now, if you think I'm a psychologist, a little bit overreacting to this stuff, a little bit extreme, I have a simple experiment. Ask any parent who's middle-aged or above if he's as strict and demanding of his younger children as he is from his younger children as he was with his older children when they were the same age. unless this person has a well-known reputation in the community to be an unreasonable person, I can guarantee you, and I'm willing to put money on this, that he will tell you that he is much less strict with his younger children. Because they've learned from experience two very important lessons. One lesson is that many things that we thought were very important, that you have to go to Mechemes HaMolek over, turn out not to be so important. And many of the things that are important are not worth ruining the relationship over. So I suggest to all younger parents that you can learn from the experience of older parents. Okay, to sum one further last point, it is interesting to note, in the context of tonight's Melav Malka, the advice of Rabbi Yaakov Horowitz, the director of Project Yes, in the special issue of the Jewish Observer devoted to children on the fringe and beyond, on preventing the problem of teen dropouts. Mamash Negev, tonight's event. Listen to one of the major points he makes to prevention of this problem. He writes as follows. In large metropolitan areas, one can daven in several shuls throughout the week without being a member in any one of them. Although this may be very convenient for the individual misbalal, the family forgoes the unique protection that the kehillah has to offer. An involved rav and rebbetzin guide young couples and their children through the inevitable difficulties that they will encounter. It is critical in the development of a Torah home that the family belong to a kehillah, attend shurim, and above all, to actively nurture a relationship with the rav and the rebbetzin of the shul. Doing so will add many strands to the communal safety net that we so desperately need. I highly agree with Rabbi Horowitz, and from what I've heard about your Tehillah, you're indeed fortunate in this regard. When a community is zeichet, a manhigim is devoted to the Tehillah, as the Rav and the Rebbetzin, and to elect leadership is dedicated to their shul, as tonight's guest of honor is Julian Chai Hirsch. All leaders who put the needs of others before their own needs, just like the devoted parents we spoke about before, that they should certainly heed Rabbi Horowitz's sage advice. Each must follow. For his own tellus and for the sake of the future of his family, she be mechazik the shul, the memaino of the gufay. And most importantly, by having a strong kesher with the Rav and Rebbetzin. In this way, we will all make Hashem be zeichet to healthy families, physically, spiritually, emotionally, at the Yisgah Tzedek.